Blog Talk Radio.
Family and friends, thank you for listening tonight. If you're listening and would like to call in to the show, the number is 213, area code 213-816-1611. Again, that's area code 213-816-1611. That is, if you would like to be on the air with us tonight and add your comments to our show. Thank you for listening tonight.
Why lonely looking sky, lonely looking sky, lonely looking sky, lonely looking night, lonely night, lonely looking night, and being lonely. Never made it right, never made it right. Lonely looking night, lonely looking night, lonely looking night.
Family member, a man who accomplished more in his lifetime than many of us. And he did it with perseverance, dedication, humility, compassion, honesty, trustworthiness, loyalty, sacrifice, service, kindness, and humor. Our remembrance tonight brings family and friends to pay tribute, even though John Engle passed away April 16, 2007. Our respects for you, John, are expressed by those who remember and loved you while you were here. Dorothy?
John P. Engle, Jr., biography. John P. Engle, Jr. was born December 17, 1910, in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, to his parents, Mr. and Mrs. John P. Engle, Sr. John, Jr., as a child growing up, was an Eagle Scout, a graduate of the Robert E. Lee High School, and graduated in 1932 with a B.S. in Aeronautical Engineering from the Guggenheim School of Aeronautics in Georgia Tech, while receiving a commission as an ensign in the Naval Reserve. He was employed in 1932 by Eastern Airlines, serving Charleston, South Carolina, and Miami Airport in Florida, City Sales Office, New York City Ticket Office, and Eastern's home office in the General Motors Building. In 1935, he transferred to Jacksonville and worked as an outside salesman and then a city sales manager. In 1939, he married Elizabeth Fleming Hamilton, and they had two sons, John P. Engle III and Frank H. Engle. John Engle served for 6 years in the Naval Reserve and called in 1940 to World War II duty and had a long and distinguished career in naval vessels with the U.S. Navy. He served gallantly and was an exceptional Navy Rear Admiral. John served successively as commanding officer of an anti-submarine patrol yacht in the Caribbean and South Atlantic, then two destroyer escort ships in the Pacific, earning two Bronze Star medals with Combat V for specific services cited as heroic and meritorious. He returned to Eastern Airlines Jacksonville office as district manager in Northeast Florida, then director of community relations East Florida. Promoted in 1970 to district manager sales and service, Jacksonville International Airport, until retirement in 1975 after 41 years. John received this beautiful Congratulations Award, which you'll see on the website, on his retirement and 13 years devoted service from his co-workers and friends at Eastern. While at Eastern, John became president of Jacksonville Convention and Visitors Bureau, the Rotary Club, the U.S. Navy League local chapters, Florida Public Relations Association, Travelers Aid Society, and the International Passenger Travel Trade Organization. He was on the board of Jacksonville Chamber of Commerce and active in Aviation and Armed Services Committees. After World War II, he continued active in the Naval Reserve, holding administrative offices in two squadrons of the NARTU Weekend Warrior Program and Assistant Wing Staff Commander for Logistics for 10 years until his retirement in 1959 with the retired rank of Rear Admiral, U.S. Navy Reserve. John Engle in 1975 focused his interest on local aviation history, becoming an ardent researcher, collector, and writer. As president of the Jacksonville Historical Society, he published his book, Aviation's Earliest Years in Jacksonville, 1878 to 1935. Some of his book reviews and edited letters were published in the FHS Quarterly, and John P. Engle, Jr. died April 16, 2007. At the age of 96 years old.
John P. Engle, the retired Eastern pilot's accomplishments. John P. Engle was invited to become an affiliate member of the retired Eastern Pilots Association. He wrote stories published in its quarterly magazine and regularly attended its annual conventions. He also contributed writings to the quarterly newsletter to awake 5 pioneer pilots, of which he was a historian member, and continued his membership in the Association of Naval Aviation and World Airline Historical Association. In 1988, he was elected to membership in Eastman's Rickenbacker hat in the Ring Hall of Fame by the board of the 8,500-member Eastern Airlines Retirees Association, EARA, and was a charter member and organization of its Jacksonville Wings Club chapter.
The Eastern Airlines Radio Show Hall of Fame tribute is given to honorable and noteworthy Eastern members who have been outstanding in their achievements and their dedication to Eastern Airlines. The purpose is to honor those that dedicate their lives to keep the legacy of Eastern Airlines in the hearts and mind of the public and future generations. We want to preserve and memorialize the outstanding accomplishments of each member we induct into our Eastern Airlines Radio Show Hall of Fame.
Sky where the clouds are hung for the poet's eye, you may find him if you may find him there. On a distant shore, by the wings of dreams, through an open door, you may know him. On a theme that is timeless, and the one God will make for your day. Sing as a song in search of a voice that is silent, and the sun God will make for your way. And we dance whispered voice, overheard by the soul, undertook by the heart, you may know it if you may know it. While the sand would become the stone which begat the spark, turned to living bone. Holy, holy, santo, santo, be. There's a page that aches for a word which speaks on a theme that is timeless, and the one God will make for your day. As a song in search of a voice that is
silent, and the one God will make for your way.
Members inducted into the EAL Hall of Fame. First class inductees: Captain Edward V. Rickenbacker, Captain Floyd Hall, and Captain Dick Merrill. Second class inductees: Harold Pitcairn. Third class inductees: Captain Robert M. Wilbur Jr. and Mr. Vito Borelli. Fourth class inductee: Captain Steve Thompson. Fifth class inductee, Eastern Executive John P. Engle, Jr.
We're fortunate to have with us tonight John's two sons, Sandy, who is John P. Engle III, and I'm sorry, that's Rusty. I get them mixed up here, and you guys have straightened me out a couple of times. And Frank Engle, that's Sandy, John's son, youngest son. And we have Edwin Skip Booth with us, an aviation attorney tonight, that will be telling us a few things about John. And Dr. Warren Brown over in the Tampa, St. Petersburg, Clearwater area, physician, also one of the strong voices of the Florida Aviation Historical Society, which John loved very dearly. And I'll give a few remarks of my acquaintance with John. Jim Hart, who is our regular host on the radio show, our regular announcer, he'll be with us tonight, and also Don and Dorothy Gagnon. I want to start off with you. Let's start off with the youngest son. Sandy, that be you. Could you tell us a little bit about, just a moment, let me see if I can get the microphones all cleared up here. I have to do all of this work here behind this screen, and sometimes I fail to put microphones on, and people are halfway down through their remarks and so forth. So bear with me. We have one hand, it seems like, in this job here. But, Sandy, I want to hear from you. Are you with us tonight on the air?
Yes, sir, I'm right here. How are you hearing me?
Oh, I hear you loud and clear since I opened your microphone. Thanks for being with us tonight, Sandy. Tell us a little bit about your dad.
Okay, I thought I'd take just a minute to talk about the inevitable question. First, let me say thank you to you, Neil, and your production crew, and warmest greetings to family members who are listening and also members of the larger Eastern family. It's a real treat to be here. When I was born, my dad was 40 years old, and of course, from the time of my birth, I thought he walked on water, so I probably wouldn't be the best unbiased person to render an opinion about his character, but I thought this inevitable question might tell a story. As I began to make friends outside of the family circle and outside of affiliation with church and Eastern and so forth, I kept running into this question over and over again. And as I got older, went to college, I kept getting it when I was up in South Carolina, and then when I was on active duty in the Navy, I kept getting this question. And later in my career as an engineer traveling all over the question, I'd still get this same question probably at least once a week. I would meet somebody new and introduce myself, and they'd put a little funny wrinkle on their face, and they'd say, say, is there any chance you might be related to John Engle? And I would chuckle and say, yep, he's my dad. And then they would always follow up with the next line, which was, your dad is a really, really fine man, one of the finest men I've ever knew, and you are really lucky to have him as a father.
Oh, how wonderful.
And I continued to get that question probably several years even after he passed away. So I would say that's a pretty good indicator of a man's character. At least I was very impressed by it. Yep. I thought I might share one other thing. My dad was active in the Naval Reserve for a lot of the time that I was in elementary school, and that meant that he had to be away at least one weekend a month for Navy duty. And then every year he'd be away for 2 weeks for his active duty for training. And then he had responsibilities with Eastern. He'd have to go to sales meetings and so forth and conventions and so forth. Those were frequently out of town. So that would mean that frequently he'd be out of town for, say, a week during every month. And then there were other organizations that he was president of, and he would have to attend meetings and whatnot. And so when all the dust settled, it turned out that he spent a lot of time away from home on the road, and probably more time than he wanted to. I know my brother and I really missed having him around a lot of weekends, and I'm sure he missed being here too. So when I was 11 years old, he did something that really impressed me. There was a pool nearby, the Good Shepherd Swimming Pool, and I joined the swim team there on the at the pool. And it turned out they started having practices in the morning, 7 o'clock before school. And so I would get out of bed and trudge to the practice. And my dad was aware of that, and he came with me to practice one time and pulled the coach aside and whispered in his ear. And they came to an agreement. And so my dad was, I guess, made an honorary member of the swim team. And so he started coming to swim practice every morning at 7 o'clock with me. And, of course, those were weekdays, and he'd have to get out of the pool and dry off and go to work and spend a full day at work after that. So I knew it was a big sacrifice for him. He had swum on a swim team when he was in high school. I think he swam also while he was at Georgia Tech. But it had been quite a few years, I think about 30 years since he'd been in the pool, and I could tell that it was hard on him. He started out putting in just a few laps and built his stamina up, got to where he could pretty well keep up with most of us. But I was just really impressed by the sacrifice involved in that commitment, and I really did appreciate it.
That's fantastic.
Okay.
That's amazing.
Rusty, would you like to add to that?
Well, I don't think I can add to it, but I can supplement it maybe.
Okay.
First, I'd like to know how many members of the audience have met Captain Eddie Rickenbacker and had the privilege of sitting on his knee and being dandled by Captain Eddie.
Not me.
That was my luck when I was about 4 or 5 years old. Captain Eddie came to town, and my father was entertaining him, and I got to meet him. Very impressive man. I think I later asked my father if he was God or something. My father said, close to it. But I'll tell you a little bit about my father's life before I came along, family lore. When he graduated from Georgia Tech in 1932, in the depths of the Depression, with a B.S. in aeronautical engineering, turned out there weren't many jobs available for freshly minted B.S. in aeronautical engineering. He searched around and landed a job with what was then Pitcairn Aviation, later to be Eastern Airlines, and was stationed in Charleston, and he was the only employee. Back then, Pitcairn was not carrying any passengers, only carrying the airmail. His duties at his station in Charleston were, he would get a radio signal that the plane was coming in. He would get the tractor and the carts drive out, he would get off the tractor and use those illuminated wands to direct the plane to a parking spot. He'd chalk the wheels, climb up on the wing, hand the pilot a thermos of fresh coffee. That was the most important of his duties. And hand the pilot a weather report. Then he'd wash the windshield. Then he'd climb down, unload the mailbags that were coming in, and load up the mailbags that were going out, remove the chocks. That was very important. Then he would direct the pilot out to the taxiway and wave him goodbye, and then take the mailbags in to the post office. Later, when Eastern started carrying passengers, he had more responsibilities. I don't think he got a raise in pay, but that was Captain Eddie. he would be in the terminal and sell tickets and check bags. The radio would announce that the plane was coming in. My father would get on the PA system in the terminal and announce the arrival of Eastern Airlines flight so-and-so from X to Y, drive out on the tractor. This time he didn't have to wash the windshield, I don't think. He would use the luminous wands to direct the plane to the taxiway and put the chocks on the wheels. Then he'd help open the door, help the passengers deboard, and show them the way to the terminal. Then he'd unload the bags from the fuselage and put them in the little train. And let's see. Then he'd go back to the terminal with the incoming bags. He'd announce the departure of the flight, unload the bags from the incoming passengers, and hook up the cart with the outgoing bags. He'd go out to the plane, lift the tickets, board the passengers, count them all assiduously, be sure the tickets match the number of passengers. He'd load up the outgoing bags, unchock the wheels, guide the plane out to the taxiway.
Oh, wow.
Then back to the terminal, unload the bags, and assist the passengers in getting their bags. If one employee did all of that today, just think how many union representatives would have rubus of the gastric mucosa.
Oh, my God.
Must be at least 20 unions would be involved in all that work that one man did in those days.
Grievance.
But those were the simple days, I guess.
A one-man band.
And he was there at the beginning.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Just wonderful hearing it.
Rusty, I believe he was there before Eddie Rickenbacker, really.
He might have been.
32, and Rickenbacker came in 34. And
you're ahead of me.
But, interesting.
That's
very interesting.
That really is.
Well,
he do all that.
Have you any other comments you want to make before we listen to some of the other
I think I've taken up enough time.
Okay,
he's probably going to say even more, so I'll let him have my time.
Well, let's see if Skip is with us. Let's see if I can find his telephone number.
I'm here, Neil. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you 5x5. Go ahead, Skip. Tell us about John.
Well, thank you for giving the opportunity to talk about one of my favorite individuals, one of the most favorite aviation historian out there. I want to talk about John Engel as a world-class historian. He left us with a legacy in the form of historical documents that accurately and in an entertaining fashion record the early days of aviation. I first learned of John Engel about 1978 when I purchased his book, which was published by the Jacksonville Historical Society and was soon out of print because I believe the 1,500 copies sold rapidly. And I knew that I had to meet this man, and I had the opportunity about 2 years later at an event he organized, and this is a testament to John's resourcefulness. He was able to bring Jimmy Doolittle, probably the most famous aviator in history, to Jacksonville on September the 4th of 1980 to celebrate the 58th anniversary of Doolittle's historic flight. For those of you who are not familiar with this record, between September the 3rd and 4th of 1922, Doolittle flew a de Havilland 4 biplane from Pablo Beach, now Jacksonville Beach, to San Diego, California, with a refueling stop in Austin, Texas. Total time of about 19 hours, 52 minutes, becoming the first person in history to cross the American continent in less than a day. And John was instrumental in getting him back here, and so that was my first impression of John, is this man really knows how to get things done. John left me, and they're now in the archives of the Jacksonville Historical Society, some interesting correspondence he had between himself and General Doolittle concerning the logistics of the event. And those of you who knew John, he was a stickler for everything being planned and preordained, and such was that event. I next encountered John in the fall of 1984 when he summoned seven or eight of us to the Green Turtle Restaurant in Riverside to found a local chapter of the Jacksonville, of the Florida Aviation Historical Society, named in honor of local aviator Laurie Young. And we had a great run of things that went on about 20 years, and I learned so much from John about the methodology, the science, if you will, of collecting and preserving history. About 20 years later, John was a spry 93 years old at the time. I thought it was a shame that his book was no longer available, and I was able to convince the law firm I worked for at the time to underwrite the republication of the book. We were primarily engaged in aviation legal matters and thought this would be a public service as well as a way to market the firm. And the second printing of the book has a shameless law firm ad on the back, not an Eastern Airlines ad, as you will recall, appeared on the back of the first edition. And we had John down to our office one afternoon for a book signing and a party to celebrate the republication of his book. And I provided Dorothy with a photograph of a young 93-year-old John Engel signing his second edition of his book. And I hope many of you will get to see it, because the look on his face says it all. He really has this sense of conveys a sense of pride and accomplishment.
Andy, they definitely will. I have that up on the website, and it's under the Hall of Fame for the Eastern Airline Radio Show. So they'll definitely get to see it.
And just to close, John influenced me in a number of different ways. I served on the board of directors of the Jacksonville Aviation Authority, having been appointed by Mayor Alvin Brown. And we celebrate the 50th anniversary of Jacksonville International Airport this coming October 11th, just in a couple of weeks. I would invite everyone, next time you're in the lobby of Jacks International, we now have a museum adjacent to the lobby outside of security, so anyone can go see it. There are a number of mentions of John on these exhibits. I had the privilege of serving as president of the Jacksonville Historical Society in 2015 and 2016, and really felt like I was following in John's footsteps as he served as president of that organization exactly 40 years earlier. And just a final note, my son graduated from the aeronautical engineering program at Georgia Tech just 2 years ago, and it really didn't occur to me till he was about halfway through the program that he was attending class in the very same classrooms that John had studied in 70 or 80 years earlier. So it was such a privilege to know John. He had such an influence on my life in aviation, and I really appreciate the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you.
Thanks,
that was great.
Thanks, Skip. And also, do you recall, yeah. Skip, do you recall, I think John told me that he was in the first or second graduating class at Georgia Tech of the aeronautical engineering, and he told me some of the members in that class, and they were all, they all became famous, of course, and I believe it was the first class of the aeronautical engineer graduating class. I believe.
I believe you're correct in that. It was sometime around 1927, 28, maybe.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, it was a new discipline at the time, and again, he was a pioneer, and fortunately left us with information so we can remember that era and remember him.
Yes. Thanks so much, Skip. Another testimony of John is by Dr. Warren Brown. And Dr. Brown, are you with us? Let's see if I open your microphone.
Yes, I'm still on board, Neil.
Okay. You've got the mic. And Warren is, I believe, well, you tell the story, Warren, from the Florida Aviation Historical Society and what you want to talk about John. The microphone's all yours. Thank you for being with us.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay, thank you. Well, it was back in 1977. We got together with Ed Hoffman and Russell St. Arles, and we decided that we were going to start a new organization called the Florida Aviation Historical Society. And we started it up. It's still going. It's over 40 years of age now. I'm the only one left of the founding fathers. And back in 1984, what Skip just mentioned, that I got a phone call from our honoree, and he wanted to come down and talk to me, and so he drove down here, and we went out to lunch and had a nice meeting, and he said, "I'd like to join our organization as a satellite, and because we have a lot of people interested in aviation in Jacksonville," and so we welcomed John on board, and he built up I think the attendance at your meetings at that time were about 150 members, something like that. And I remember very well the invitation we all got to go up there and meet Jimmy Doolittle, and we did, and we met Jimmy. And I remember what Jimmy said, and I think John remembered it too, because Jimmy once said years ago, he said, "When we're born into this world, we should leave it with just a little bit better place to have lived in." So in other words, our job on coming into this planet was to make it a better place for those coming ahead of us. And I think John followed Doolittle's advice. I tried to find it, and I think that most people who have been successful in life have followed old Jimmy's. Jimmy was a great guy. I remember shaking hands with him. He was a boxer when he was younger. And when he shook hands with me on Jacksonville Beach, he took my hand, and it was like I was in an iron grip. And the guy had big, big paws. He could really, he could really box. If you remember his history back in Alaska. Anyway, he was a friend of my friend Joe Bowdwin, a World War One pilot. And he and Jimmy and John and the group got and myself, we all got together and had a great time. And I think John, being a Navy man, I was a Navy man. I was spent 11 years in the service. And I would always have liked to have had John for a commanding officer, because he was such a gentleman and a nice person to be with. He was a true officer and a gentleman, and I shall always remember him as one of the best. So that's about all I have. I have nothing but good things to say about John Engel, Jr. Back to you.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Warren. Appreciate it. And John introduced me to you. We both drove down to visit with you. And, of course, I joined the part of the Laura Young chapter here in Jacksonville and had the opportunity to drive down with John and interview John. And I'm still looking for those tapes, but I've got 3 hours of interview tapes that I did during our drive to visit with you. And we also, I think, met with you and some of the other board members to start the Florida Aviation Hall of Fame, I believe. Didn't John suggest that to you, Warren?
Yeah, that was a guiding light because John straightened us out because we knew nothing about a Hall of Fame, but he went and contacted the Georgia Hall of Fame, the Alabama Hall of Fame, Aviation Hall of Fame, and the Louisiana Hall of Fame ahead of us, and he gave us the information, and he said, Warren, do not make this a political outfit, he said, because first, you know, people would be coming with money to get into the organization, and you don't want that. Do it on their merit, not with their money. And I've been trying to keep it that way. I just relinquished my ability to run the Hall of Fame. It's been taken over by a couple of 99ers, and but they hope they will follow that arrow that John gave us about keeping it apolitical and to keep it on merit only.
Yeah. I had the pleasure of driving to Warner Robins when Eddie Rickenbacker was inducted into the Georgia Hall of Fame. And, of course, it was sponsored by Eastern Airlines. And Eddie Rickenbacker was installed, and it was a black tie event and beautiful dinner. And the airplanes that were hanging on the from the hangar where we dined, and the folks that were there. I think there were five inducted into the hall at that time, and had the pleasure of sponsoring Captain Eddie Rickenbacker, which, by the way, is in the Florida Aviation Hall of Fame. And I think John and I came up with the idea that Eddie Rickenbacker should be involved in the Hall of Fame here in Florida, and he was in the first class inducted.
That was so good.
You know, I first met John. Go ahead.
I was going to say, if any of you people ever get over to Lakeland to the Aviation Museum at Sun and Fun, we have a nice section of the museum which is dedicated to the Hall of Fame, and there are pictures of all the members, including Eddie Rickenbacker and Jimmy Doolittle. And I think it's something like 17 members now. And so if you get the opportunity, just to gaze through it, it looks real, real nice.
I go there every year.
Back to you guys.
During Sun and Fun.
Yeah.
But I first met John, I believe, in 1995 when my wife Peggy and I moved to the Jacksonville area from Pensacola, Florida, home of Naval Aviation. And he invited me to join the Jacksonville chapter of the Eastern Airlines Retiree Association, which he started here in Jacksonville, of which he was a past president, of course. And our friendship immediately grew into a 9-year friendship and adventure it was. You see, John enjoyed getting people involved in various activities, and I came along and he saw another candidate that he was going to get and be involved in about as many things as he was involved in. And he always liked to get people involved and get them in a leadership role, not just a member, but he wanted you really to be involved in it. There was sponsoring. He sponsored me to become a member of the Jacksonville Downtown Rotary Club, and I needed three sponsors, and so John came up with three sponsors that some people recognize, like Ms. Fran Kenny, the former president of Jacksonville University, and retired Vice Admiral Pete Easterling. And next was the Jacksonville chapter of the Florida Aviation Historical Society that he introduced me to. And I enjoyed those meetings with Skip. You were the president. I've served, I think, for 1 year. And it was a lot of fun with John there and talking about aviation. We had a little program, and it was great. That was just a few things. He enjoyed being a member of LEPA also. And he joined, I don't know when he joined the Retired Eastern Pilots Association, but he went, like Captain Jim Holder said earlier, he went to a lot of the conventions, and I went to two of them with him, and we shared a room, and of course we talked late into the night until we talked ourselves to sleep. And he contributed a lot of articles and short stories to the magazine Repartee, which I became the editor after it was passed over to me from Captain Bill Malone, who had it for about 15 years. And I think Jim Holder's coming up on 15 years or maybe more of being the editor after I turned it over to him. But John got me involved in so many things, and he encouraged me to select the best stories. I remember sharing, he came to the office just like it was a regular, just like Dorothy comes and serves the website without any pay. Well, John came to the office, and I had a desk for him right beside mine, and we worked together mostly on Eastern stuff, and because as the editor of the newly editor of the Repartee magazine, we had to put the first one. Actually, John and I went to the printing press and took the wet pages as they came off the press and collated them and folded them and stapled them together. Now, this was over 2,000 magazines, but John was there with me in doing that. And he looked at all the stories, of course, of the magazines in the past, because he was a collector. Boy, did he collect. And I got collections here on my bookshelves of John's past collections and the timetables I've got and things like that. But he saw all the stories that was in that magazine that was published three times a year during those days. And he suggested that maybe we could come up some good stories and have a hardback printed so that we could raise money for the Retired Eastern Pilots Association. So we did. We selected the stories that we thought were would fit into about a 250-page book. It was a hardcover book, and we published 2,000 of these books, and we titled it Heroes, Triumphs, and Tragedies. And they all went. I snuck a box of them myself without telling anyone, but I've just about given all those away now. Jim Holder may have a few of those, but at any rate, I cherish that, and along with John Ingalls' book that he published. Anytime John attended a flag meeting of retired admirals, I was right there with him, because he didn't have to do anything except call and say, "Neil, I'm going to a flag meeting of retired admirals. Would you like to come along?" And you bet I was right there. I always enjoyed being listening to the bosun whistle or pipe the flag-ranked officer aboard ship, which when John came aboard, they did that when he came aboard. And we had dinner in the wardroom, and it was an affair that I'll never forget, when they had the chief of naval architect, ship designing, as a guest speaker, and he told about the future ships the Navy had in the future that they had planned. And so it was always really great. And that was out at Mayport Naval Air Station. John had so many friends, including one that he introduced me at an air show at the Naval Air Station Jacks Air Show 1 year, and it was none other than Florida's United States Representative Tilly Fowler, good friend of John's. And John always had the best seat in the house. That's why I like to tag along. And he attended several board functions he got me involved with, including the Florida Aviation Historical Society, as I mentioned, and the Jacksonville chapter, the Laurie Young chapter. He enjoyed coming to work always dapperly dressed, including his fedora hat. He even gave me one that I liked seeing him wear, and I suggested, I said, "John, will you ever get tired of that hat? I'd like to have it." And I still wear it occasionally. I still have that hat. His desk was next to mine, as I said, and we would talk for hours. And I'm still looking for that 3-hour taped interview I did with him about his life. Oh, I could go on for hours about John and our friendship. And he was a remarkable man, and truly, and he was called Mr. Eastern Airlines in Jacksonville. So, John, I miss you, as do all of your friends. Let's see. I've got someone else here, Jim Hart. Jim, let me see if I can open your microphone. And you're up there in Martha's Vineyard, way up north. Hang on, Jim. Don't say anything until I get you opened up here. Okay, you're on the air, Jim.
All right, fine. I wish that you folks in Florida could enjoy my 65-degree weather up here with no humidity. So, on to John. I had the pleasure, I believe it was in 1964, to meet John for the first time. And I believe it was the time when Floyd Hall joined our company in 63, and I believe it was 64 that he was being introduced to all of the management people in the company. And I remember at the Doral Hotel when he was there, and of all people, Captain Rickenbacker introduced Floyd and was shaking hands with most everyone, including me. And you mentioned, or someone mentioned about the size of this fighter's hand. Captain Eddie had a huge hand, and his whole body seemed to me to be huge. And of course, that's the reason he lasted so long on the raft and didn't get killed or die from heat and so on. But I remembered at the table we sat at, John was at the table, and as his son says, he was away a great many weekends, and I can believe it, because I attended a number of meetings, and Holt Shipman was vice president of the Southern region. He and John were good friends. Al Terrell, Freddie Blackwell, and I sat at the same table, and it seemed like we had meetings quite frequently, which was good because it introduced, among other things, I think you'll remember the Happy Holidays program we had in the 60s, and Ed Yarnell was district manager down in Miami, I think, at the time. And Ed had his sales representatives going to all the hotels and sewing up deals that would fit into our Happy Holiday program. And, of course, other people from the home office were invited to these sessions. I remember Tron Sundum and Kermit. Bud Schultz had to do with all of the travel agencies that we were working with for many, many years. And they would get together with Ed, with John, and discuss what he might want in terms of the Happy Holidays participation. It all did not include just Miami. It included other areas as well. And I felt so great in being part of the program back that early in my career. I joined the company in 1957 and had sort of a quick rise through the management process. And if I remember, someone mentioned that the Eastern Airlines building was in the General Motors building at one time. When I was there, it was called the Eastern Airlines building, and my office was on the 9th floor, looking down at the skating rink and watching the Christmas tree put up every year. I don't remember that John came to the home office, at least while I was there, or maybe he didn't have any opportunity or business with George Gordon, who happened to have been the vice president of marketing at the time. But one of the things I was so pleased to hear, I didn't know this many years ago, that John was involved in Rotary International. I'm a past district governor of Rotary International in 1979 and 80, and I had 6,500 Rotarians, Greater Springfield area, that I was responsible for. And Rotary, of course, is the largest service organization in the world, with 1,200,000 members, ladies and gentlemen, in 183 countries all over the world. And I'm sure that John and the Jacksonville contingent had a lot to do with helping people through Rotary International. I just wish I had known him at that time. And I remember John, as all of you have said, as being a very, very gracious gentleman. And when he was with managers and vice presidents that he had known for quite some time, they had a nice time talking old times and talking about the future as well. Because we, of course, in those days, we were still pretty much in the propellers. Now, I guess we had started to receive the 727s by then. But the jet era was so new to all of us. And the people in the maintenance area, Bill Cambray and Frank Sharp, were just ecstatic when they learned that they didn't have to perform maintenance on the jets as they had to on the propellers. On the propellers, of course, you had a 30, 60, 90, 120, and 240-hour inspection on each of those airplanes. And the jets, all we used to do is gas them up and let them go. I don't know. I'm sure that the maintenance people were overjoyed when we started receiving a jet. And so I think that's about all I have to say about John, except I wish that I had been a little closer. I was more in the Hartford, Springfield, Washington, D.C. area most of the time. I certainly would have loved to have known him to a greater degree. Back to you, Neil. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much, Jim Hart. And
Don,
you've got something that you want to add? Don Gagnon.
I just wanted to add something. I'm not scheduled to do this, but, you know, I was listening to Rusty Engel talk about his father at the airport. And when I started in Fort Lauderdale in 1960, he kind of described the way I worked. I mean, we met the airplane, we unloaded the bags, we deplaned the passengers, we wrote their tickets, we reboarded the airplane, we started the engines, we fueled them, we did all that stuff. And it just seems like, you know, for the first 2 or 3 years of my life at Eastern, of the 30 years, I think I had a great learning experience. Unlike Jim Hart, my friend who wrote tickets on an orange crate, I did not do that. I was close to it, Jimmy, and I go to the airport now, and I just I don't think that the folks that are working there now realized what the industry was back when we started.
That's right.
It was customer service. It was just straight ahead. You know, balls to the wall, as they say. Just go. It just doesn't happen anymore. But I am so grateful for the the time that I had in those days, growing up with this company and seeing all the advances that were made, and more still to come, I'm sure.
We've got a board full of callers, telephone numbers that appear on the producer's board. And I know a lot of folks are listening that may be friends of the family and are either our guest that you've heard tonight. And so if you'd like to make a comment about John Engel, please do so. Just say hello. That's all I need. And you're on the air. I've opened all the microphones up, and I know Norma Jean Borger. Norma Jean, are you still with us?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes,
now,
sir.
You were down in Miami, and I don't think you knew John, but...
No, but I did write to him. I remember his name on the memos I had to write him, but Lord knows I don't remember what that was about.
Okay. Well,
but he was in sales and service. For 2 years when I was on the seventh floor with Frank Williams and Sharp, that's no doubt when I wrote to him.
Okay. Very good. And I still have his Eastern Airlines business card, as we were all given at one time when we came with the company. And John gave me one, and I have it in my rotary file, the old rotary file, and look at that. I have one from Floyd Hall and some other distinguished Eastern people. But it was
at least you could find it with the rotary file. You didn't have to worry about the internet going down. That's a royal pain.
I hear that, boy.
Absolutely. If any of our listeners are the ones that are on board, because my board is completely full, I've opened all the microphones. If you'd like to add a comment, or those that have already spoken about John, just add any comments you want to make, remembrance, or whatever. We have time to do that.
Yes, I'd just like to have a quote, and then I'll turn it back over to someone. There was a great quote from John F. Kennedy. As we express our gratitude, we must never forget that the highest appreciation is not to utter words, but to live by them. And certainly John Engel did that. And I don't know John personally, but I know him through Neil, who talks about him in the 5 years that I've known Neil. And it's a great conversation each and every time. So thank you all for joining us.
Yeah, that's great, Dorothy. Thank you.
Thank you, Dorothy.
Neil, and, Jim Holder.
Yes, Jim.
Can I
Jim
say
Holder. Yes, sir.
I'd like to follow up what Dorothy said. I didn't know Admiral Engel myself. I knew him through the works that he did with you on the Repartee magazine and all of the other stuff that he did. And tonight, I really have felt sorely young because listening to what y'all are talking about back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s and everything. I came with Eastern 1 month before the 727. In October of 63, I hired on, and the first one landed the morning, early in the morning, and they called it the Sunrise at Eastern. And that was aircraft 102, 727. I wish I'd could say that I'd met Admiral Engel, but I didn't. I didn't meet a lot of people. I'd never met Eddie Rickenbacker. I saw Dick Merrill once. I didn't get a chance to talk to him. But I had something happen to me at the Reaper Convention the other night. You know, you were there. You and Dorothy were there, a couple of weeks ago. I was sitting next to this fella, and I'd never flown with him. And he was very personable, and he was an older guy, which I'm sort of young, I guess, at 81, but he was older than I am, and I don't feel very young, but I don't. But anyhow, I'd seen him around, and he'd made conventions and everything, and Johnny Steinmetz, I believe, you may remember this, Dorothy and Neil, he got up and talked about this famous guy, that Laura Young. and I looked over at Laura Young, and I'm sitting next to him. I mean, literally at my elbow. I looked at Laura, and he sort of looked at me, like, what's this going on? And they, Johnny Steinmetz, we call him Johnny Easton because he is Easton all the way, and he's going to be the president again of REPA next year. And Johnny Easton was talking about his dad by the same name, Laura Young.
God,
I looked over at Laura and I said, my goodness alive, I didn't know I was sitting next to the son of this famous guy, so you're pretty famous yourself then. And he had this lady with him that he'd been to many conventions before, and I never got to fly with him, but he just grinned at me. So we had something you to talk about. Really, Admiral Engel, I never met him, but Lord knows I've read a lot about him. But Neil's right. He was very instrumental in Neil's great publications of his repartees back in the days. And one last thing I will say, Neil, when Captain Rickenbacker was inducted into the Georgia Hall of Fame, I guess I had something to do with it because I was a former chairman of the union up here, and I was asked to support it, and I did, and wrote a letter and all that kind of stuff. And I was there that same day you were. And guess who I got to sit next to? Robert L. Scott.
Remember?
Okay. Yeah, he autographed my book I bought. He autographed everything I could get. I had him autographed. Yeah, but it was a pleasure. I remember being a young kid in World War II sitting on a swing in my mother's house fighting the Japanese in 1943, and I went to see 30 Seconds Over Tokyo and all those other shows and everything, and he wrote that book, God is My Co-Pilot.
I'm
sitting next to him, and he's writing, and, you know. So I've met a few old fellas in my life, I guess, and I just wish I'd met Admiral Engel. But Mike, I don't have anything else.
I sure do.
John and I had the pleasure of getting some material from the Georgia. Bill Malone and Gib Guerin spearheaded that, getting Eddie Rickenbacker into the Georgia Hall of Fame. And John and I asked them to give us some information so we could use to get Eddie Rickenbacker into the first class of the Florida Aviation Hall of Fame. And they did. And of course, he was a shoe-in. He got in the first round. But Georgia was kind of difficult because they wanted people to have been born in Georgia in order to be in that Hall of Fame.
You're right. It was a struggle. Yeah. It was a struggle getting him in there, but we did.
Yeah, convinced him that he meant a lot to Georgia and at Atlanta Airport. And so they inducted him into it. Any other memories from anyone of John? I want to invite our guest, Skip, Rusty, Sandy, to go to the EAL radio show website, and you'll find lots of memories like we shared tonight about your father and your friend. You'll find a lot of that on our website. It's page after page after page of Eastern stuff, and that's what we talk about on our radio show. So you're welcome to come back. Join us during our show because it's an open forum. Usually we do have a topic, and we've done 400 and about 50 shows now, 8 years, almost 8 years in November, and had fun doing them because we're talking about Eastern Airlines, a company we dearly loved, just as John Engel did. And so we want to invite you to go to our website and register and put in your little profile, or don't put a picture if you don't want to. But it gives you the opportunity to just come on and click on your password and code and get into the there are a few pages that are open that anyone can view, but there are lots of memories and memories of and members of Eastern Airlines that we have almost 1,000 now that we're trying to. I think we're 11 short of having 1,000 members.
We have 989.
Eleven short.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we welcome
now
you
the
to
Hall of Fame, Neil. Neil, the Hall of Fame is under the Eastern History. Is anyone allowed to go in that, or do they have to go in and register for that?
I think you have to register to see that, I believe. And
okay,
and so,
if John's son or anyone tonight wants to do that, please register and go into Eastern History, and it's the bottom row is Hall of Fame, and just put your cursor on it, and you'll see your father's name or your friend's name, and just go right in to see John Engel and all that we talked about tonight. Most of it is in there. I have a few pictures. I have your picture of your dad that Neil gave me, and I have the congratulations medal that was given to him, along with a couple of other pictures of John, so be sure to do that. You'll enjoy it. It's really a good-looking page there, and I love the one of him signing his book that's in there. That's really a nice photo.
Yeah, it was. It was great.
Yeah. Well, that website is Eastern Airlines, and I don't think you'll find any better resource of Eastern Airlines that anywhere that's represented that's we have on that website. Dorothy has done a wonderful job. I started it, but I could never finish anything, and so she came along and boy did she and she's continuing to put together a brilliant website. I mean, it's not a Facebook. It's all Eastern Airlines stuff in there. It's just amazing to I go to it every once in a while to get information. History. Skip, you'd like it because there's a lot of history there. And,
I love it for that reason.
Now.
Yeah, and also there's an archive of every show that we've done on the radio and what it was about and who our guest was during that show and the topic, and you'll find it a lot of stuff there that you might want. And, oh, by the way, I want to tell Dr. Brown. Warren, you still with us? He may have already left. But,
have you got his mic open, Neil?
I don't see it here. We do. No, he just dropped off.
Okay.
We sent him because he does a newsletter of the Florida Aviation Historical Society, and he publishes it. It comes out monthly. It's about, 12, 14-page newsletter. Stapled, and it's a great aviation, about aviation, military, general aviation, commercial aviation, and lots of stuff there. And he takes stories, and I just sent him a story that John Engel did, and it was a story about Eastern losing a passenger in flight. It wasn't a D.B. Cooper type of jumping out of an airplane, but a passenger actually jumped out of an Eastern Kurdish Condor, I believe it was. And John Engel was involved in the search for that person that committed suicide, and his body was found several weeks later. And John tells the story about that, and it was published in the Repartee magazine. And I sent it off to Warren Brown, because he publishes the newsletter for the Historical Society, and we're going to see that, I think, in his next issue, along with this dedication or this honor of John in our Hall of Fame. He's going to put that in there as well. So we certainly appreciate everyone being with us tonight and talking about John, and we want to sign off by a music arrangement that I love, and it's a pilot's flight, high flight, and we've all heard it, but you may not have heard it this way, and I'm going to play it now. It's not too long, but to close our flight, our honor to John, I want to play this one. I've played it recently. If I can find the record, here it is, right here.
Oh, sky on laughter's silvered wings. Sunward I've climbed and joined the tumbling birds of sun-split clouds and done a hundred things. I've wheeled and soared and swung high in the sunlit silence, hovering there. I've chased the shouting wind aloft and flung my eager craft through footless halls of air. The higher we fly, the farther we go, the closer we are to each other. The darker the night, the brighter the sky. In peace, oh my sister. I've topped the windswept heights with easy grace, where never lark nor even eagle flew. And while with silent lifting mind I trod the high untrespassed sanctity of faith, put out my hand and touch the face of God. The higher we fly, the farther we go, the closer we are to each other. The darker the night, the brighter the sky. In peace, oh my sisters and brothers.
Beautiful.
Love that guy.
Thank you all so much for being with us tonight. That's our broadcast in honor of John Engle. We welcome you to come back every Monday evening at 7 p.m. We have another Eastern story that we'd like to share with our listeners. And so we always sign out with this song from, of course, Lawrence Welk. Thanks for being with us tonight. We love you.
Thank you, everyone.
Every dream comes true. And now, till we meet again. Adios. Au revoir. I'll be there. Good night.
night, host and guest.
Hey, great show, Neil.
That was wonderful, and we thank everyone that was on as our guest. That was just great, Neil.
Fantastic, fantastic.
Great, great job.
Good
see
show,
you on
the
Neil.
Website.
Really
see you on the website, and see you Thursday from the Eastern Files.